And welcome to Studio 2, Doors Opening. I'm Avi Wolfman here.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. I don't want to get my backpack or anything caught in those doors. And if you have been caught on by now, we're talking about mass transit today.
Mass transit.
Something many of us care about, a lot of people care about, and a lot of people have questions and comments about. And so today on the show, we're going to be sitting down with SEPTA's CEO and general manager, Leslie Richards. We haven't talked to Leslie in over a year.
That's right.
Eager to have her back. And our big question of the day is this. Is SEPTA working for you? If not, what can SEPTA do to make it better? We want you to call us. The number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. I was telling Avi, I caught the bus to work for years.
Mm-hmm.
It was so convenient. You know, and I
got
my little...
What number bus? What was your...
47.
The 47.
I caught the 47 bus.
It's a fine line.
Went from South Philly all the way up. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people rely on SEPTA to get around every day. It's an economic driver. We know that. But really, since its inception, it's been caught in this cycle of underfunding and budget turmoil. Mm-hmm. And we're right back there again.
Yeah, and because of the pandemic.
Yep.
You know?
So ridership's down. Mm-hmm. Where is ridership trending now? We're going to talk with Leslie Richards about that. And we're also going to focus again on this immediate need for dollars to plug a budget shortfall in this fiscal year. So if you've got questions about that,
please,
or really anything SEPTA related, studio2@whyy.org. Before we get there, Jerry, a trio of local news stories, and I'm not breaking any news with this one, but yesterday was a landmark political day in Philadelphia. The appetizer was earlier in the day. J.D. Vance, the VP nom for the GOP, was in South Philadelphia talking about his campaign, his priorities, and also, you know, attacking Kamala Harris a bit, as VPs are wont to do. Let's hear a clip from that event in South Philadelphia. Here's J.D. Vance.
Kamala Harris ought to stand before the American people and persuade them of why she's the right choice. She ought to answer for the fact that she wanted to ban fracking and now she allegedly doesn't. She ought to answer for the fact that she wanted to defund the police. She ought to answer for the fact that she opened up the American southern border, and she ought to answer for the fact that groceries are unaffordable and housing is unaffordable because of her policies. So to the media, please, for the love of God, do a better job. The American people demand it.
All right, so that was J.D. Vance earlier in the day, South Philadelphia. Then in the evening, in North Philadelphia, Temple University, that was the big one. Huge rally, about 10,000-ish people there for the first public appearance by Governor Tim Walz as Kamala Harris's pick for vice president. So Harris was there. Walz was there. Governor Josh Shapiro was there. So lots of big speeches, lots of enthusiasm, big crowd. Let's hear a little bit about what Tim Walz had to say. This is about reproductive rights.
Some of us are old enough to remember when it was Republicans who were talking about freedom. It turns out now what they meant was the government should be free to invade your doctor's office. In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
You were there in the crowd,
Jerry.
You wanted to get a little front seat to history. You wanted to check out the scene. Your reporter senses were tingling. What did you observe? What did you see?
Well, first of all, people were really, really excited. The line wrapped around the buildings more than once.
Yeah.
Okay. It took 90 minutes for me to get in, and I had somebody waiting for an hour when I got there. It was packed literally to the rafters, but these are my three takeaways. Mm-hmm. Number one, people were excited about Kamala Harris, as excited as they were in 2008. Folks actually told me that when Barack Obama was running. And the second takeaway is that they love Josh Shapiro. They gave him a standing ovation, but they also really like Tim Walz.
And positive I'll tell you, response.
Positive response. Folks were laughing and smiling during his speech. And they were saying stuff like, oh, and yes, Coach Walz, you know,
Coach Walz,
Coach
okay.
Walz, they called him that. And then the third thing that I took away from this is I feel like folks don't have this sense of inevitability that I think that people kind of fell for in 2016 when Hillary Clinton ran. people know that former President Donald Trump has a real chance to win. And people feel, the folks that I talked to felt like they had to do something.
Right.
That they actually couldn't just sit by and it would ultimately happen. Instead, they felt that they had to participate. And that's one of the things that VP Harris said is, look, we're the underdogs in this race, meaning the Democrats, and that folks had to get it together. And so you heard that from voters who were in the audience. They felt like they had to volunteer. They felt like they had to get their friends to vote. They felt that they needed to do work, at least the folks that were around me and talking about why they were there. And they came from all over the region, by the way.
An energized base.
Yes.
Was kind of your big takeaway, it sounds like. And look, that's maybe to be expected because this is all new.
And these are people who came to the rally.
Yeah, these are people who came to the rally. But it's new. You know, this is fresh. Yeah, you know, Harris has only been in this position for a few short weeks. Mm-hmm. Walz has just emerged on the scene. Everything is new. Everything is fresh. There's lots of energy. But we'll see how it all plays out over the next 90 days.
Yeah, because she has not sat down with journalists yet.
She still
has to do the DNC. So there's 90 days left.
And we know a lot can change.
A lot can change.
Based on the last 90 days. Story number two, Cherry.
Yeah, five secretaries of state, including Pennsylvania's Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt, they're going after Elon Musk over artificial intelligence-generated election misinformation on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Okay.
So the top, these are top election officials, basically, and they're pressuring X to make some changes to their AI bot. It's called Grok. And
Grok.
Let me explain why. Like,
not Grok.
Grok.
Mm-hmm.
So within hours of President Joe Biden announcing that he was dropping his bid for reelection, Grok, this AI bot, began to falsely put out information that the ballot deadlines for president had passed in nine states, including in Pennsylvania. And it suggested that VP Harris had missed those deadlines and was not eligible to appear on those ballots in place of President Biden. Now, Grok is only available to Premium X and Premium Plus.
Yeah, I'd never heard
users.
Of it, but yeah. I'm not premium,
so yeah. I don't know. But apparently, this misinformation was shared in posts between July 21st and July 31st, and it reached millions of X users. So Schmidt, as well as these other secretaries of state, wrote a letter to X, and they're saying, look, you need to make some changes to Grok to ensure that voters have correct information. They want to direct folks to canivote.org, a nonpartisan site. So far, they say that, you know, X's response has been a, quote, shoulder shrug.
Yeah. And Grok, by the way, is supposed to be, according to Elon, this sort of anti-woke AI chatbot. Anti-woke. Didn't know chatbots could be woke or anti-woke.
They could be woke. They're not real.
But that is Elon's claim. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see some of these secretaries of state challenging him publicly in this way. And like you said, no response so far. Let's end with a palate cleanser. Olympics.
Yes.
Lots of great Olympic performances by local athletes over in Paris. We had a couple rowers with local ties who helped the U.S. win a historic rowing gold medal.
Woo woo! Go U.S.
Fencer Maya Weintraub of Philadelphia helped the U.S. team win a team gold in the foil competition.
Yes.
Great job, Maya. You're a gold medalist.
Yes.
We are proud of you.
Mm-hmm.
But the Inquirer's Mike Sielski had a great column about a local athlete who made a mark by finishing in last place.
Aww.
You're already in, I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Jessica Gabay. She is from North Philadelphia, but she competes for Cote d'Ivoire, which is a West African nation. That's where her parents were born. And she is a true late bloomer. She went to Central High School in Philadelphia. She wasn't even always the best runner on her high school team.
What?
Then she went to Howard University.
Go Bison.
What do we say?
Bison.
There it is. She wasn't even recruited to Howard. She walked onto the team, or she ran onto the team, I guess.
Yeah.
She ran onto the team, but she just kept getting better and better and better. And then she turned pro after Howard. And yesterday she competed in the final of the women's 200 meter sprint, which is one of the biggest track events at the Olympics. She finished in last place in the final, but simply getting to the final eight
was a huge
upset, a huge shock. And the sort of culmination of this career that no one saw coming. So congratulations to Jessica Gabay of North Philadelphia. You are an Olympic finalist, and we are very proud of you.
I know. This is the kind of story that Audie Wolfman-Arendt actually love.
I do love it, but you love it too.
I do love it. I do love it, but this is the kind of story. This is the perfect kind of story. Like the person who becomes a hero for their country and for America too. Yep. And it's sort of like this just happened because they just kept at it. And I love it. I love it. Go, Jessica.
We love it. I also loved watching this competition where people do really fast rock climbing. I never seen that before. Like two little Spider-Men crawling up the wall.
I need to go on YouTube and find this.
Check this out. It's amazing. I'm obsessed with this now. It's
okay.
Like speed rock climbing. Anyways, coming up, we are talking with SEPTA CEO Leslie Richards all about SEPTA, yes. All about the future of mass transit. Send in your questions. Studio2@whyy.org, and we'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Many people in our region rely on SEPTA to get around. In fact, about 700,000 riders a day hop on and off their trains, subways, buses, and trolleys. The Southeastern Pennsylvania Transportation Authority took a big hit, though, in ridership during the pandemic. Luckily, those numbers are rebounding somewhat, but funding could soon be a major problem.
Just last month, lawmakers in Harrisburg gave the Mass Transit Agency just about a third of what they were hoping for, $51 million, saying they would revisit the issue in the fall. The fall's coming up. But as federal pandemic dollars run out, SEPTA is facing a $240 million deficit. So what could all this mean for riders? Will we see fare hikes and service cuts in the future? To answer those questions and a whole lot more, we're going straight to the source. We have SEPTA CEO and General Manager Leslie Richards in studio with us. Welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, folks, we want to hear from you. What do you think of SEPTA? Is it working for you? What would you like to see improved? Send us your questions via email at studio2@whyy.org or call us 888-477-9499.
And Leslie Richards, thank you so much for coming back to Studio 2. So you heard, SEPTA expected $161 million in state funding, but the current budget only offers a third of that, postponing those permanent funding discussions until this fall. I want to open the conversation with this question from a SEPTA writer.
Given that the state has not provided the funding that SEPTA requested, is regional rail threatened, or do you have another plan?
And you heard her concern. That was Nan from Chestnut Hill, who is particularly interested in the Chestnut Hill stops. But I want to also ask you the question, what is at stake when we're talking about this funding? If you could address her concern and talk about that.
Absolutely. Look, we are in an operating budget crisis. So there's a lot at stake right now. We did get a third in one-time funding of what we asked for, but it's really a quarter of what we need. And so just so people understand, operating budgets, it's what we use to pay labor, power, fuel. So we cannot run the system we are running today if we do not get this operating gap filled.
And so, can we just do the numbers real quick? So it's $240 million gap this year. You got about $50 million-ish from the state. So that, I'm just doing the quick math here, leaves you roughly $190 million short-ish in that range?
It does, except for the fact that we're dealing with the FTA right now and on some requirements where we have to increase resources, increase personnel. That's going to be about another $35 million. So we're already $35 million on top of that.
So in the low $200 millions.
Yeah.
That's this fiscal year.
This fiscal year, and that continues every year out, right? And grows.
And so Nan asked about the regional rail. What could be affected? Because people want to know, they're thinking about their stops, they're thinking about where they are and how they ride SEPTA.
Right. So look, we're considering, and it's up to the board. The board's going to have some really difficult decisions to make. But obviously, we can't run a system that we can't fund. And so the things that we can control are fares. We'll be looking at fare increases as well as service cuts. And they're going to be significant because to make up over $200 million on an annual basis is severe.
What are the funding options at this point that could plug that hole that could, you know, forestall that scenario. So is it just state funding? Can counties step up here in the time period that we're working with? Are we really just looking at the state here? Or are there any other sources that could come into play?
Look, the way that we're funding and the way that most transit agencies are funding, the state provides a big part of the funding, right? So we've seen Massachusetts pitch in for MBTA. We've seen California pitch in for BART in San Francisco. We've seen New York pitch in, right, for MTA. So it's pretty typical for the state to come in. Obviously, we're open to any other revenue streams that we have, whether it's federal or local. But it'd be pretty normal for the state to take this on.
So how much do you need from the state? And what are the, have you sort of worked through scenarios? You know, if you don't get the pie in the sky number, what are the scenarios for dealing with that?
The scenarios are what we're talking about. Yeah. We're talking about fare increases. We're talking about service cuts. We're talking about other ways to cut expenses. But we're also looking at the other revenue, right? We already have advertising. We already have naming rights. We already have our SeptiKey Advantage program with over 50 employers here in the Philadelphia region providing about 90,000 riders with free transit as a part of the benefits that they receive for working for these employers. So we're looking to improve those types of partnerships as well. So we have to increase revenues and we got to decrease expenses.
When you talk about service cuts, I think people have, because we don't know what the service cuts might be, they've leapt to their own conclusions. So in Northwest Philadelphia, a lot of people have this campaign to save the Chestnut Hill West Line because they believe that's where the funding, the service cut would be. I mean, can you give any more details about like what the order of operations would be for service cuts? Like where might you start?
Yeah. So first of all, we would do what's called a Title VI analysis. It's an equity analysis. We would look across every mode. We look across every community we serve because we have to be equitable here. We can't hit certain disadvantaged neighborhoods more than we hit other neighborhoods. So we would look at that across the board, and then we would look at ridership. We would look at, other lateral services that we have to get people, you know, where
lateral
are
services,
the gaps?
Can you give me a definition?
Yeah. Just like if we have other lines that are parallel or that they could maybe travel another 5 minutes. I'm not saying it's easy for people, right? But maybe if they traveled another 5-10 minutes, they could get to another line or they could get to a bus route or they could get, you know, to another mode of transit.
I got to ask you, I mean, you guys are a mass transit agency. Have you not worked through like these scenarios? I mean, I worked in corporate. We had scenarios and memos.
Plans A's, B's, and C's.
I mean, and so that's the question. Do you guys have plans A's, B's, and C's kind of already set up and with ready to go?
Yeah. So just to put it into perspective, the last time we've had to look at these types of cuts was over 20 years ago.
Wow.
So we have not. This is not something that you typically go through. But yes, of course, we know that we're going to have to look at a 20% at least service cut. That means that regional rail lines will be discontinued. That means that bus routes will be discontinued. Just think of any bus route you could take, and if you reduce the stops by 20%, that significantly impacts. We're talking about buses right now that travel at 15 minutes or less frequency. We're talking about maybe every hour. Imagine if you had to get to your job and you're used to going, you know, hey, it doesn't really matter, or I know I'm going to get a bus every 15 minutes, every 10 minutes, and now all of a sudden it's every hour, or leaving is every hour, or getting to your doctor's appointments or doing your shopping or anything else that you would need transit for. It's really going to impact how you make those decisions. So trust me, it's not something that we want to do because we know ridership is going to decline and going to decline significantly because transit will not be the best option for people.
I'm sure you hear this from some lawmakers in Harrisburg who would look at this situation and say, well, look, ridership is down. In a post-pandemic world, fewer people need this service, so the system should shrink to accommodate that. What's your response to that? Because I think some people would look at this scenario and say, austerity kind of should be the path forward to match the post-pandemic reality.
Yeah. Our riders need us more than ever. In fact, coming to the studio today, I was on our Market Frankford line, crowded subways, right? And our subways today are running at 6-minute headways. And people are utilizing us on a daily basis. Also, to put into perspective, many people are now on remote working or hybrid working models. So if they used us 5 days a week and now they're using us 3 days a week, which is fairly common right now, that's a 60% decline. And so our ridership right now is over 70%. So in a lot of ways, we've gained riders. We have more riders. It may not be, you know, a complete decrease in riders, right? It's just how often they're using us. And so I think that's pretty significant, the fact that we've hit over like these hybrid work models.
So you're saying sort of fewer trips overall, but perhaps the same number of distinct people using the system. Do you have numbers to sort of prove that or back that up?
We're looking at data, and so are other transit agencies across the country. It's really hard to collect that data. What I know is when I'm on the system, my buses are crowded. My subways are crowded. We see a lot of people coming and going. You know, yesterday we had a big day. You know, we had Zach Bryan in town, a lot of people on our Broad Street line. We had the vice president in town, a lot of people on our subways and our regional rail. And so we're seeing a lot of use. We're seeing a lot of activity. But yes, I think people are using us less.
Quick follow-up. I know that you have been supportive of Mayor Sherelle Parker's return to work policy. I know it's only been a couple of weeks. Has that had any impact?
We're seeing, you know, more activity, but we were seeing it before. So, you know, we continue to see an increase. Every month we've seen a little more, which is really wonderful. And so, you know, we don't have the numbers from that month because it's only a month. I don't even know if it's a full month yet. But we will be looking. But we love the support. And, of course, we love that the city provides free transit for every employee. That's what we love that.
So tons of questions coming in, and we have a caller now on line one. This is Deja from Philadelphia who wants to ask about the safe and efficient use of the money you already have. Deja, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi. My question is, you know, like, explain to the taxpayers and the riders how you're going to improve the services you're already being paid to provide. You know, we pay for our own staff for their SEPTA passes and stuff, but on a daily basis, they're not safe. One of my employees just last week got groped while on SEPTA. Another one of mine that has to ride the Market Frankford line has to step over people, or every time they get on the train is full of weed smoke, or somebody's on there shooting up. So SEPTA on a regular basis continues to say they're not getting enough funding, or they continue to ask for more taxpayer funds, but the people that are already utilizing SEPTA are not seeing a difference in the services that they're already using.
Thank you so much for that question and that comment, Deja. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a chance to respond, Leslie.
Sure. Richards. Look, feedback is so important to us. So first I would ask every single person who rides SEPTA to download the SEPTA Transit Watch app. That helps us in real time. If you see someone smoking weed on the system, you put it right into the app and you can do it anonymously, and we will send a response. So often we can only respond, like all the eyes and ears that are there. But look, I'm very happy to report that serious crime has come down 37% compared to last year on SEPTA. Our complaints on cleanliness, as well as, you know, you mentioned the vulnerable population and seeing homelessness, that is down significantly as well. We know what we are doing is improving those numbers. We know that we're also working on, you know, fare evasion, smoking, quality of ride issues. We need the data in order to be able to respond as efficiently as possible. So please, I ask everybody, download the app. Again, you can do it anonymously if you don't want to give your name. But if you report things in real time, we can then respond in real time. And all of the metrics are leaning toward a more favorable number. And I'm also very proud that that 37% decline in serious crime is larger than what Philadelphia is seeing. So crime on SEPTA is going down faster than crime in the communities that we're serving.
And we are speaking with the CEO and general manager of SEPTA, Leslie Richards. We want to hear from you. What do you think SEPTA could be doing better? Is it working for you? The email is studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. Leslie Richards, I mean, the perception of safety is very different from crime numbers, because it's about a feeling, the way people feel when they are riding SEPTA. And Manny wrote on Facebook, more security during the hours. School kids are using it. You'd be surprised how loud and rude people could be. People feel some kind of way about that. Also, Nisha wrote that her biggest issue with SEPTA is safety. And she says, how are they not addressing safety issues, especially when kids are about to go back to school? She's really nervous about that. And so I want to talk about some of these quality of life issues. I know SEPTA has been working on dealing with that. Tell us, what is SEPTA doing to sort of deal with the homelessness, to deal with people using drugs, to deal with some of the public urination and all that? And how is it working?
Yeah, sure. Look, we have partnerships across the city, our police, and we have our own police, and they are at full complement. We are one of the only police departments that actually has, you know, very few vacancies right now. And that's because we have good leadership. And we also have, you know, wonderful environment where they feel like they are actually doing meaningful work. We work with our SCOPE program, nationally award-winning program, where we have specialists that deal with homelessness, they deal with drug addiction, they deal with mental health issues. We're making sure that people are getting the resources that they need and the services that they need as well. I mean, that's, we just don't want to be moving people around. And then we're also working with a variety of organizations that help provide shelter spaces and help get people into safe spaces. Our transit system is not to use for shelter. And so we do move people out of our stations because it's not safe for them. And no one should be sleeping on a platform or in a corridor or in a transit system. And so we continue to do all of those different activities together. And as you know, the region is has a lot of challenges right now, but we're dedicated to working on it. And again, all the numbers are showing that we're moving in the right direction. So all the efforts that we are using, including the 30,000 cameras that are on our system, as and we have a virtual patrol as well. So it's all working, but I do know that perception is different than reality. So I invite people to be on the system. In fact, I've been taking elected officials on the system. I've been taking others on regular days, just showing them I'm on the system daily. My family's on the system daily. My daughters are running, you know, on the system daily. I feel comfortable on having them ride the system. I ride the system all hours of the day as well. And it is, you know, it is safe. But there are, you know, incidents that, that happen. And, you know, we want to, again, just be very honest and make everybody aware of all the work that's going on. They should feel good about it.
If you had more money to invest in safety, where would you put those dollars?
So right now, I just want everyone to know what we hope to do if we get money from Harrisburg, as the governor has proposed. We are going above our headcount in police. We're going to add a 40 additional officers.
And what is the current headcount? 250-ish, do I have that right?
Yeah, and that's about 200 officers right on the system. Yeah. But that's different shifts, right? That's what we have. And so we the board has given us the ability to go above that number. And by the way, this is the largest number of police officers SEPTA has ever had employed near history. So that is good. We are adding 100 new cleaners to make sure that we can keep the system as clean as possible. We all know you feel safer when it's cleaner. We've done a lot of upgrades, you know, making sure lighting is there. We have new navigational signage. In fact, the Broad Street Line will be the first mode that gets the new signage this fall. We took a look at Paris, New York, and London, and saw how do people get around, right? It's more numbers, letters, shapes, colors. Can you get around if you're not originally from Philadelphia? Maybe you're new to the area. And so we're going to see all of that signage, knowing that you're going to get to where you need to be, knowing you'll be able to make those transfers, knowing that you won't get confused on the system is also something that makes it safer. My colleagues across the country are calling us to see what it is that we're doing because our numbers are trending in a more positive direction than many of theirs are. And so we're happy and, of course, to share what we know. But we work with our colleagues all the time because I want to find out what they're doing as well and what we can learn from them. So we're continuing to do all of this work. And again, things are going in the right direction.
I want to follow up with a question about cleaning. Paul comments, it says, please ask you to have all the train stations in the poorest zip codes power washed daily. And they said that they are tired of the look and smell of these stations. That's Paul says that. Aaliyah writes, I know passengers have to do their part in keeping SEPTA clean, using trash cans, etc. But what can SEPTA do to make it more clean? You talked about cleaning, but can you go into detail about what SEPTA is doing? Because that is a big reason that some people refuse to ride.
So again, please report through our Transit Watch app. That's where so much of our data comes from. So if there's a particular platform, if there's a particular station that you want to make sure is being addressed, let us know. Because we do have to prioritize how often we do things. We do deep cleans. We do them on a monthly basis, sometimes biweekly. We do them every single night. Please follow our Instagram, our social media. You'll see how things are going. We cannot do deep cleans every single day at every single station, but we do clean. Every station gets cleaned multiple times a day. And we have cameras. So if someone, again, has a specific area they want us to look at, I can go up to our virtual patrol and look at the day's, the day's video and see how clean it was at certain times, how dirty it got. And then we can understand, is it certain venues are letting out at a certain time that allows that, or riders are hitting us at a certain time. And so that we can, again, be strategic and deploy our cleaning teams at the right times.
Before we go to break in just a couple minutes, I want to bring in a comment that sort of starts in quality life and then wraps us back around to the budget conversation. And this is from Rafi, who says, I know fare increases are an inevitability, but wouldn't it be most responsible to limit slash eliminate fare abuse and theft first? I know it makes people's blood boil when they see fare evasion. I think there is a question, though, of how much it actually impacts the overall budget, not just sort of the psychological impact, but the actual dollars and cents impact. Can you give people a sense of how big a problem fare evasion is? I mean, is it actually causing some of the budget woes?
It is. And we're looking to collect better data on it. We're not going to balance our budget on just fixing fare evasion. The good news is we're piloting new gates right now that have shown to reduce fare evasion.
These are the ones in 69th Street?
At 69th Street. So they're taller, they're lower. And it is also deployed with imaging technology on the top so we can see what type of fare evasion. Is it people tailgating, right, trying to follow someone who's already paying? Is it people trying to climb over? Is it people trying to climb under? Is it people pushing through on the wheelchair accessibility, the ADA accessibility gates, so that we can better plan so that our law enforcement also knows how to better respond? Some of the data, and I'm going to share it with you because you've asked, but we are looking to get more detailed data. But we're looking at certain stations that have, 25% fare evasion. Mm-hmm. So that's significant, right?
Can you give a sense of what dollar impact that sort of leads to in the end? Is it a million bucks? Is it 10 million? Like, what range are we talking about in terms of how much the system loses that it could reasonably recoup if it, upgraded some gates and things like that?
Yeah, look, we're looking at tens of millions of
tens
dollars.
Tens of millions, okay.
Yeah. I'll get you that exact detailed number. But again, I'll have that shortly when we have some more details. We're always trying to study to get, the better data that we have, the better we can, we can respond. The good news is with these pilot gates, we're working on it. And now that we have a police force that has the full headcount that they need, we finally have also the ability to get police officers riding our buses, riding our trolleys, riding our subways. We also have police officers that we can now deploy, and they can focus on fare evasion, where we didn't have that just a few months ago because we just got new cadets out through the academy. So that's why it's so important that we have serviced police department so that we can have those extra people. It matters to have the personnel, and that's why the operating budget is so important, because you need the right amount of people in order to provide the service.
Yeah.
Much more to come with Leslie Richards, General Manager and CEO of SEPTA. What do you want to see SEPTA improve? What are your questions about SEPTA? Call us 888-477-9499. Email us studio2@whyy.org. Quick break, and we will be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
I know, Donald.
Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. And we are talking about SEPTA, the Southeastern Transit Authority, the Southeastern Pennsylvania Transit Authority, with CEO and General Manager Leslie Richards, discussing the budget shortfall, ridership numbers, safety, fare prices, and much more. And we want to know what you think about SEPTA. Is it working for you? What could SEPTA do better? You can email us at studio2@whyy.org. You can also call 888-477-9499. Again, that number, 888-477-WHYY.
I want to bring in some more emails that get at, because we talked about the budget earlier, but some of these more big picture concerns so that we perhaps can get out of this cycle of crisis. This is from X, a user named Robotical2000 says, would you lobby Harrisburg for a regional tax authority to give SEPTA the local funding share it needs and deserves? Bill emails and says, I've heard the counties around Philadelphia contribute less than they should to SEPTA. How much are they contributing now, in your opinion? How much should they be contributing? And what's the justification for that number? So let's kind of talk about some of these structural budget issues and both of those questions, if you could take those, Leslie Richards.
First of all, I love these questions. I love that people are paying such close attention, and I love that people want to help us solve this problem. I just want to start off by saying we are one of, if not the most under-resourced when it comes to funding transit agencies in the country. And just to make that comparison, when we take a look at Boston, which is really the most comparable agency to us because they run multiple modes, and Massachusetts and Pennsylvania have some other similarities. So Boston this year will have $1 billion more dollars in their operating budget, as well as $1 billion more dollars in their capital budget, to run a system that is similar in size to us and has all of the modes. So that's what I just want people to understand.
Is that because of local contribution, state contribution? What's making up the difference?
They have higher local as well as higher state.
Is it taxing authority that makes the difference there? Because I know that SEPTA, I used to cover the School District of Philadelphia, you know, it was always a frustration that they could not, you know, levy their own taxes. And I know the taxing situation is somewhat similar for SEPTA. I mean, is that the core issue? What is the core issue?
The core issue is we need dedicated funding,
dedicated funding.
Matter where it comes from. So the governor's proposal, the one that did not pass this past year, had the money coming out from the sales tax. What would have been great about that is having dedicated money coming to us every single year so that we could, and it was a percentage of the sales tax. Right now, our counties, who are our local funders, they are unable to raise revenues that can be spent on transit except through property taxes. I'm a former county commissioner. I would not, even though I love transit, I would not support that if I was still in that county commissioner role. Very hard for them to use those property
because
taxes.
Because it's politically unpalatable?
Mm-hmm. Because it's needed for all of their other general fund needs, right? And to increase property taxes really puts a big burden on those residents. What we are asking Harrisburg for at the same time, and we've been asking for years, is enabling legislation which would allow counties to raise revenues in different ways. Mm-hmm. And we know even for our five counties, Philadelphia, and then we have Delaware, Chester, Montgomery, and Bucks, they may all have different ways that they want to increase. You know, some might make sense, you know, one way, and others may make sense in a totally different way. So we want to give them options. And if they choose, and all of them have been favorable to this discussion because they know we need more funding for transit, everyone also knows that a healthy transit agency leads to healthy communities that it serves. We see it time and time again. I mean, you see it internationally, right? When you have these wonderful international communities, they all have strong transit. And so we are tied very closely to the health of the communities that we serve. And so if we could get that enabling legislation through, then the counties could invest in themselves. But as it is now, our local counties don't have that option.
Yeah, I want to read this email from Gloria, who says, I love SEPTA and rely on it. We're fortunate to have it here. But unfortunately, public transit is not funded enough in the USA. I wish we had funding like in Europe and hope more money comes through in the fall. I want to bring in a caller.
Amen to that. I just have to say.
Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you. Yes.
But we do have a call from Mary, who's from Philadelphia, is a teacher who rides daily, but just bought her car. And she'll explain why. Mary, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment here for Leslie Richards?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have ridden SEPTA for about 20 years now. Post-pandemic, the landscape of SEPTA has changed drastically. There's less and less people riding, and it's bringing in an element of transient people. I just don't feel safe anymore, and I purchased a car just so I don't have to take SEPTA anymore.
Wow, that's a striking comment from Mary in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Decades-long rider. And is now opting out. What are your thoughts on that, Leslie Richards?
We saw that earlier, or I would say in the years right after the pandemic. But I would ask, give us a try right now, because it is a very different story than it was a year ago, even. Just to give you an example, we were at 60% ridership of pre-pandemic a year ago, and now we're at 75% ridership of pre-pandemic. So it has increased. We're trying to get frequency up, and providing that service. So don't give up on us. I know all the costs of owning a car as well, but keep trying and also keep giving us your feedback so that we can use the limited resources that we have as strategically as possible.
And we're going to bring another caller in. They're calling in for you. We have Dana from Hunting Park. She says their kids use bus, but there's some issues there. Dana, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thank you so much for covering this. This past year, this issue has been really frustrating. I had one child who was a senior at a public high school and another one who's attending a Temple. This fall, they'll both be attending a Temple. And we live just a short bus ride away from that area. But it's been so frustrating because the buses will not come on time. Mm. They will be on the app and the bus just doesn't show up. They don't even know, what time should I leave? What time should I go stand at the bus stop? Because they're not sure whether it's going to come or not. They end up riding Ubers, which, is more expensive. I'd mm-hmm. rather have them riding bus because it's really just the 4 bus takes straight from our house down to where they need to go. So I would love to just see more reliability.
Dana, because I know you guys are doing, mm-hmm. and I think it's going to roll out next summer, this whole reimagining of the bus network, and a lot of people want more frequency and reliability from those bus services, and I believe bus ridership has rebounded more, so a lot of people really rely on those buses, even in the post-pandemic world. Leslie Richards.
It is. We do have a whole new bus network. And we're very excited, and that will be starting to be implemented next year. In over 60 years, we have not taken a look at our full bus network and how to better utilize corridors and frequency and get more frequency. As you can imagine, when someone calls out and we don't have enough operators, if we miss one bus and it's coming every 10 minutes, not the biggest of deals. But if it's coming, every 30 minutes, it's a very big deal. But I have very good news for this caller, because right now we are working with our technology team to eliminate what we call ghost buses. And that is so that all of the data on the app will be accurate. Every single bus.
So it doesn't say a bus is coming, but indeed when a bus isn't coming.
Correct. Okay. So every bus will have an APC, a passenger counter, as well as timer on it. So we will have a vehicle location. And so you will see when the buses are late, and it will be tied to a vehicle and how late it's going to be. I'm very excited about this. In fact, we just hired a new chief technology officer. You have to understand, we're using communications and signals on our system that were developed, some of them nearly 100 years ago, right? SEPTA, a lot of our system was developed before cars were here, yeah. Right? We are an older city. And so to use some of this old technology has been extremely challenging, but we're really excited, and we are on the forefront of transit agencies with this technology.
And I want to follow up and just make sure we're clear, because Jim emailed and says that he would like to see real-time tracking that shows the exact minute when the next bus, trolley, subway, or train would arrive. And you're saying that that's going to happen.
Yes. Look, I would like that too. And we are all working on it. These are the things that we're working on right now. So we're going to have the locators, which means that all of our app information as well as our website information, the locations are going to be more accurate. And that should be rolled out this fall. We're also looking at e-ink signs to put at more bus stations. And that means that there will be signs that are getting information, and it will show when the next bus is coming, exactly what you're asking for, the real-time data. Mm-hmm. The communications and signals on our subway systems are a little older, so we're going to see it on our bus system first, which is the majority of our riders. You're absolutely correct. And our buses right now are at 80% of pre-pandemic levels. Yep. They are coming back faster as well. So it's half our ridership. So we have about 350,000 riders on a daily basis taking our buses, and we also have a higher ridership.
Let me bring in another caller. This is Karen from Overbrook, who uses SEPTA frequently. Karen, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
My comment was, I just wanted to say that I do notice the difference, and I'm feeling safer. I actually take the bus, and sometimes I take the L in the morning time to go to work, and I use the transit app. And I rely on it, and I'm very pleased with that. So I want to give I do see the difference, and I do see SEPTA doing what they're saying they're going to do about the safety and things. And I had a couple of times I saw someone, reported someone smoking pot on the L, and as soon as I got off, I saw a couple of SEPTA people, and I just told them, and they said, okay, and they followed up and did what they had to do. Hmm. So. So I'm confident there's a change, and I'm seeing it, so I'm feeling safer. All right. I haven't really driven it at nighttime, but during the day as I go to work, yes, I do see it.
Well, that's Karen from Overbrook's perspective.
Thank you so much, Karen.
And so some people are seeing some differences from early pandemic to now.
Yeah. From seeing, our statistics, more riders should be feeling like Karen's feeling, because we are seeing the improvements. And she's being very honest. She is going to see someone smoking every once in a while, but when it's reported, more often than not, she's also going to see that response that is fast. So we want everybody, right, to give us a chance, like Karen's giving us. Come on the system. And when you see things that either don't make you feel safe or that worry you, or things that should not be happening on our system, report them and let us respond. But we're doing everything we can so that riders are experiencing that positive experience more often.
And we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left, but I want to take some time, and we want to talk about the future of SEPTA.
Let's
talk about some big picture things. I know that customer service and making SEPTA more user-friendly has been two things that you've been very focused on.
Yes.
Tell us some of the big picture things that we can look forward to as we move into the future of regional rail here.
Sure.
Or not just regional rail, but SEPTA.
I understand, yeah. So, look, we're already making it easier to use. We want to remove any barrier. If someone has to decide whether they want to take transit for the day, we want this to make their, to be their top choice. So we've made it easier. We have contactless payment. And again, that is not a typical thing that you can experience in all transit agencies across the country. You can just tap your credit card. We now have on our transit that you can use your watch, your Apple Watch, as well as without having to unlock your phone. That's a new, you set it up and through the settings. So that's new for us as well. We're going to be bringing that all to regional rail as well. That's the only mode that doesn't have that available, but will very soon. So we're making payments a lot easier. We're also doing ADA accessibility projects. We are thrilled that this capital budget, when you look at it over the 12 years, will make our system 99% ADA accessible. Our old system that was built so many years ago, this legacy system, right now it's around 60%. And that will mean every single stop on the Broad Street line, as well as on the Market Frankford line, all of our trolleys, everything will be ADA accessible. And then we're really thrilled with all the vehicle procurements that we've been able to move ahead with. Thank goodness for the federal transportation
new
bill.
LCARs,
yeah.
Right?
Yes.
2029. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for noticing. Yes.
And they look very futuristic, I have to say. And they've got that bench seating and some ability to pass between cars.
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah, what's the theory behind that? Like, why sort of reformat the cars this way? And by the way, you can go Google and you can find the renderings of the new LCARs.
They're
beautiful. The theory behind sort of like the new layout there?
It gives flexibility to our riders. If you have a stroller, you don't have to pack up your stroller and try to fit into a tight space. If you have a bicycle, how do you come on with your bicycle? If you have packages, it just gives a lot more flexibility if you have a wheelchair, if you have a cane, all of the things that people travel with, if you have children with you, all of everything that you have with you in your daily travels, we want you to be able to fit comfortably on our transit system. But we also have new trolley cars coming. We have new Broad Street Line cars shortly we'll be announcing. And we also have a partially funded our regional rail for a new fleet there as well. So that's big news item here.
As we close out, though, I just want to ask, like, big picture, because we had the Secretary of Transportation, Pete Buttigieg, on in March, and he was talking about how we need to reimagine transit for a post-pandemic world and get rid of the hub-and-spoke model and go to something that's a little more flexible. Like, what does that mean to you? Because we have people asking about reimagining regional rail and that initiative, which is sort of ongoing. I mean, like, when we talk about moving away from a hub-and-spoke model, we got about 30 seconds. I mean, what does that mean? What is transit going to look like in 20 years?
It means that you'll be able to use transit more often than you can right now, that there'll be options for you. But we're very lucky right now where how our infrastructure is, how our regional rail is. I mean, just think of New York where you can only go, you're either going to Penn Station or you're going to Grand Central.
Right.
You can't go across on the rail. You have to get off and use a subway in between. Not in Philadelphia, and that's unusual. So it's just about being able to use transit as often as you like and to give you the mobility choices that you mean. And I think Secretary Buttigieg is right on point, and his focus has been fantastic.
Well, we know that we did not get to every question this hour.
Because there were so many.
There were so many. But we do thank you for your time, Leslie Richards, General Manager and CEO of SEPTA. We would love to have you back.
I'd love to be here, and I loved all the questions. And thank you for caring about SEPTA. We care about you as well.
Wonderful. And that's it for today's edition of Studio 2. Our show was produced by Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered today's show. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gray.
And I'm Avi. See ya.